When Kamenetsky spoke about her Milchi Yehuda Lefkowitz, he used to emphasize Kibbut Aveim and the importance of Kibbut Aveim for every Ritzel boy. I'm not sure why I was asked to speak about the topic of the exceptions to Kibbut Aveim, when you don't have to do Kibbut Aveim, but that's what I was asked to speak about, so that's what we'll talk about, when Kibbut Aveim does not apply. I'll start with an actual Shaila that I was asked a little while ago. Hi. About a month ago, I got a friend of mine told me, guy is about, let's say, 40 years old. He grew up in a very, very yeshivish family, extremely right-wing kind of family, and he was very turned off by his whole upbringing. His 11 siblings all thrived in that world and did great and were learning full-time for many, many years. He was very not into it. He rebelled. He went, spent some time in the Far East, spent, you know, the whole normal story that you hear about this kind of rebellion, certainly not keeping kosher, not observing Shabbos for a good amount of time. And then ultimately he found his way back, he got married, and he sort of settled down into a very nice, positive, modern Orthodox lifestyle. He's observant of Torah mitzvos. He learns pretty much every day, sends his kids to find yeshivos, but wears jeans and t-shirts and certainly does not wear a black hat. And not just that he doesn't, but he was so turned off by that whole pressure in his upbringing that he couldn't bring himself he's almost disgusted by it, if you could, for himself. He doesn't judge other people, but he finds it something that's very difficult for him. So what happened was his mother is, Rachman al-Tzlan, she's very ill, and it's a matter of time, and she's speaking to all of her children as she's nearing the end, and she says to him, listen, pretty soon you're going to be saying Kaddish for me. I only have one request for you, that when you say Kaddish for me, you wear a black hat the entire year that you say Kaddish. I don't want you to say Kaddish for me without a hat. You should belong to this family, and that's what we do in this family. And she could have asked him anything else in the world, and he would have been eager, excited, happy to do it. But that one thing, as crazed as she is about, yes, wearing the hat, he's equally crazed about not wearing the hat. And his question was, do I have to listen to my mother? Do I have to do what she said? It's on the one hand, it's something that I find extremely difficult. On the other hand, it's her dying wish. So it's a little hard to just say, nah, not interested. So he said, and if I don't have to listen, this was an interesting thing, he said, can I lie to her? Can I say that I'll listen and then what she doesn't know can't hurt her? She's not going to be here to catch me not wearing the hat afterwards. So that was his shyness. I thought that maybe that when we view this topic of the exceptions to Kibbut Aveim, we could try to figure out, now that shyness happens to be bigger than just Kibbut Aveim. It's a shyness in mitzvah l'kayim divrei emes, which is sugya maseches Gittin. To what extent do we have to listen to the dying wish of a person, even if it's not a parent? And what are the parameters and limitations of that? But let's try to keep it narrowly focused on Kibbut Aveim. So before we get to the exceptions of Kibbut Aveim, it is important to emphasize how important and big a mitzvah Kibbut Aveim is. Kibbut Aveim, according to the Gemara Maseches Kiddushin, Ne'emar Kavedes Avicha V'Simcha V'Ne'emar Kavedes Hashem Mehoncha. The Tanakh uses the same word when it describes how you honor your parents and how you honor Hashem. It's a lashon of kaved. So since that lashon comes up in both contexts, so Hishvar Kosov Kibbut Aveim L'Kavod HaMakom. The Torah equates Kibbut Aveim with the kavod of the Ribono Shel Olam. So that's step one. The Kibbut Aveim is this massive mitzvah. Hashem considers it like you're honoring him. So much so, the Gemara goes on to say that Hashem says, when I see that you honor your parents, since they're my partners in creating you, I like to hang out with people who honor their parents. I really don't like to be too close to people who don't honor their parents. So it's a kavod ha-makom. An additional element of, an additional highlight of just how important Kibbut Aveim is the Rambam's formulation. The Rambam writes, Kibbut Aveim, mitzvah saseh gedola. Now, if I were to ask somebody, what's a big mitzvah? So we know the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says we're not supposed to try to figure out what's a big mitzvah and a small mitzvah. They're all big. Every mitzvah is important. Every mitzvah is a big mitzvah. What do you mean? This is a mitzvah saseh gedola. What does the Rambam mean by that? That Kibbut Aveim is such a big mitzvah. So I thought of a couple of possibilities. I'm not sure, to be honest with you. A couple of possibilities. If you have suggestions, you can tell me also. One possibility I thought is based on the Gemara that Abaye commented about himself that because Abaye was adopted, he didn't have biological parents that he knew. He never had the opportunity to honor biological parents. So Abaye said that in a certain way, he's relieved that he never had that nisayon, because he doesn't know if he would have been able to pass the nisayon. That's how much kavod you have to show your parents, because he doesn't know that he would ever have been able to show that level of kavod that's really necessary. Abaye wasn't his real name. Rashi in Gittin says his real name was Nachmeni. He was adopted by Rabba Bar Nachmeni. So Rabba Bar Nachmeni named him after his father, Nachmeni. So as a nickname, he called him Abaye, Miloshon Av, as my little tati. So that was that's how he got the name Abaye. Abaye did not know his parents. So that might be what he means to say. The Rabbi might mean to say it's a mitzvah gedola, not in that it's such a great mitzvah, but lufum tsara agra, based on how difficult it is to do a mitzvah. That's how it's commensurate with the schar you get for the mitzvah. So it's a mitzvah gedola because it's so hard, it's so difficult to do the mitzvah of kibra ve'eim properly. That's one possibility. Other possibility that I thought of is that generally we categorize mitzvahs into two categories, sometimes three. There's a category called mitzvahs ben adam lechavero, and a category mitzvahs ben adam lemakom. So we know that when we eat matzah, it's very clear, mitzvah ben adam lemakom. You sit in sukkah, mitzvah ben adam lemakom. You give tzedakah, ben adam lechavero. Hachnasas arachim, ben adam lechavero. Very easy, usually, to figure out where something belongs. They say sometimes the third category, because there's another category that the Gra sort of invents, and based on Pesukim, called Mitzvos Bein Adam La'atzmo, where the Gra emphasizes the idea of just being a good person, which sometimes is either taken for granted or completely ignored. That in addition to actually doing technical mitzvos, people are supposed to be good people. Whether it actually manifests itself at that given moment in doing something for somebody else in a Ben Adam L'Chavero kind of way, but just being good, being a stable, good-hearted person is itself a mitzvah. That's what we call midos. A person has midos, that's a mitzvah Ben Adam La'atzmo. Kibra ve'eim is unique in that it's not easily categorized. Now, on the one hand, it's how you deal with other people. So it's clearly Ben Adam L'Chavero on that level. On the other hand, you have this Gemara staring us in the face that Hashem says, you honor your parents, you're honoring me. Well, any honor to Hashem is a mitzvah, ben adam lemakom. And also, it probably fits the third category also. If a person thinks of his parents in reverential terms, a person understands the akaras hatov that he has to have for his parents, that's a basic midah that a person has to have to understand what his parents have done for him by bringing him into this world and everything they do after that point that they bring him into this world. So that it may cross all three lines of all three categories of the mitzvahs. And that might be why it's called the mitzvah saseh gedola. Those are the two possibilities that I thought of. I'm sure there are other possibilities out there, but that might be why the Rambam describes it in this way. Just one more word about the importance of Kibra Ve'eim, or the nature of the greatness of this mitzvah, and then we'll move on to the exceptions. The Chayyadim writes that mitzvah of Kibra Ve'eim is done in three ways. It has to be done b'dibur, b'maisa, and b'machshava. It has to be done with words, it has to be done with actions, and it has to be done with thoughts. So the first two are easy to understand. How do you do the mitzvah of Kibra Ve'eim with words? How does one do the mitzvah of Kibra Ve'eim? So that seems pretty simple. You speak very nicely to your parents, respectfully to your parents. You don't argue with them. It's in fact, the mitzvah of Kibra Ve'eim with words is even fulfilled after a parent dies. The Gemara says that there's a chiyuv to honor parents while they're alive, there's a chiyuv to honor parents after they die. But there are two different types of chiyuvim. How do you honor a parent when they're alive? The Gemara says, ma'achilo. Actions. You give them food, you give them to drink, you go shopping for them, you help them get dressed if they need, you help them with whatever physical needs they have. That's how you honor them when they're alive. What about after the parent dies? So when you quote a parent after the parent dies, you don't say, you know, this is what my dad said. You say, Kach amar Abba Mori Hareini Kaparas Mishkavo. Speak very reverentially about a parent. That's that a person should always speak in parents like you're not just stop quoting a person, you're quoting someone great, and the words that one uses should reflect the idea that you're quoting somebody great. Those are easy. Machshava is a little bit more challenging. What does it mean to honor parents b'machshava, in thought? I'm thinking about being nice to you, I'm thinking about, you know, going shopping for you, but I'm not actually going to do it, and that's a mitzvah of Kibra Ve'eim. That's ridiculous. I mean, if your parent says, why didn't you call me? I haven't heard from you in 3 weeks. You can't say, well, I did think about calling you a few times, but you know, then I decided against it. That's not okay. That's not a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Kibbutz Avim. So Chai Yadam formulates how one does Kibbutz Avim b'machshava. And this struck me as soon as I read it. He writes, "Dahainu sheyidme be'enav shem gedolim v'nichbadei aretz," that a person should view his parents as if they are gedolim and the most respected people in the world. Even though no one else seems to think so. Everyone else looks at your parents like they're just regular people, or at best sometimes, and you're supposed to look at your parents like they are gedolei olam, which means that you actually have to believe that. Meaning it's not just to lie to yourself, but to highlight their positive attributes in such a way in your mind that you view them as gedolei olam. That's how one fulfills kibbutz avim b'machshava. I was thinking, as Rabbi Kamenetsky was speaking this morning, about going to visit gedolim before a kid becomes bar mitzvah. A lot of people go to visit gedolim for advice on difficult life decisions that they make, that when it comes to any sort of life decision, if one really views their parents as gedolei olam, a person cannot make a decision without consulting their parents. If you really view them as gedolim, you're going to run to this gadol, that gadol. What about the gedolim that you're closest with? The gedolim who are your parents in your own mind. That's part of the mitzvah of kibbutz avim, to view them as gedolim. A lot of times when talmidim ask me for advice on different issues, what yeshiva to go to, or dating issues, not 11th graders on dating issues, the post high on dating issues. So my first question is always, what do your parents think? So some kids will tell me what their parents think. Other kids will like look at me sideways, like, who cares what my parents think? Like, why would you ask that question? Well, your parents are the gedolei olam, meaning aside from the fact that as much as I love you, they love you more, and as much as I care about your well-being, they care about your well-being even more than I do, and as much as I know you, they know you even better. Aside from that, you have to view them as gedolei olam. You have no requirement to view me as a gedolei olam, so but you do have to view them as gedolei olam. So that's the importance. I'm always hesitant to talk about exceptions to kibbutz avim. So I always want to like preempt it with more time spent on the importance of kibbutz avim than the exceptions. But let's get to the exceptions. There are four basic categories of exceptions to kibbutz avim. You have exceptions that relate to religious life that are going to affect a child negatively in a religious way. You have set exceptions that relate to social life, and by social life I don't mean that the parent cramps the child's style in who he likes, you know, and how he socializes. It would have to be something a little more meaningful than that. And you have things that are harmful to parents. Sometimes people, their judgment is impaired, or they just don't know what's good for them, and they need to be protected from themselves. So even though it involves disobeying a parent, if a parent says, do me a favor, push me into oncoming traffic, a child cannot do that. You have to protect the parent from making a stupid decision like that. And then you have a fourth category that didn't really fit into any of the other categories, so we'll just call it miscellaneous. Let's take one category at a time. Religious life. When it comes to religious life, the Gemara in Maseches Kiddushin talks about a father and a son learning together. And the Gemara says that afilu ha'avu b'no, ha'ravu talmido, that are learning together, a father and a son, a Rebbe and a Talmud learn together, that nasim ka'ovim ze'ezeh. They look like enemies. They fight with each other. They argue. They're screaming because that's how learning works. That's how it's supposed to go. When you're learning with Chavrusa, you go back and forth. And then the Gemara says, but by the end of the day, they're ohavim ze'ezeh. It's like they love each other. Once they close the Gemaras, then that experience of learning together creates this bond and creates this relationship where they love each other. Mariv Rabbi Rav Shechter likes to tell the story of a fellow who was on the train with the Mir Yeshiva as they were escaping to Shanghai, and there was a guy on the train, a non-Jew, who kept a memoir of everything that he saw around him on that train with all these yeshiva bachrim, and he wrote in his memoirs that there was the boys would after davening, they were after their prayers, they would take out these enormous books. And they would open up these enormous books and they would kill each other. They'd yell at each other and scream at each other for like hours on end. And then they would close the enormous books and all of a sudden they were best friends again. And he said what this fellow was describing was confusing to him, but what he was describing is exactly that Gemara. That when you learn, you're supposed to argue and fight and, you know, look for the emes. And then at the end, that experience of going through it together brings people closer together. So when it comes to father and son learning, normally you're not allowed to disagree with the parents. You're not even allowed to agree with the parents. Meaning if the parents are in an argument with somebody else, you're not allowed to say, my dad is right. You're not right because that makes it look like your parent needs your support. And he doesn't need your support. Who are you? It's what the Gemara terms, Yehuda va'od l'kra. Who are you to add on to someone who's on a much higher level than you to begin with? But when it comes to learning with a parent, a child has a right and an obligation to argue. There's a tshuva of Avadi Yosef has. Someone wrote to Avadi Yosef, I can't believe that you argue on the Ben Ish Chai. I know the Shita, about whatever it was, I know the Shita of the Ben Ish Chai makes no sense over here, we don't understand it, but he's the Ben Ish Chai. You can't argue on the Ben Ish Chai. And Rav Avadia goes, shakes out every maramakam that exists on the importance of arguing with people greater than you when you think that you're right. In Torah, you have to find the emes. You have to look for the truth. You can't only focus on who the person is. You have to focus on the Torah, on the truth of Torah. That's one exception to the mitzvah of Kibra Avein. Another exception is if a parent tells a child not to do a mitzvah. Parent says, don't eat matzah, I find matzah disgusting, I don't like to eat matzah. The Gemara in Bamitzia gives the example. The parent says, don't do a Shabbos Aveda. So you can't listen to that. Yeah? Any question? No? Oh, sorry. So you don't listen to a parent who says not to do a mitzvah, because as the Gemara says, kulchem chayavim bekvodi. The parent is also obligated in the honor of the Ribbono Shel Olam, so the Ribbono Shel Olam has to take precedence. And these are all things that relate to religious life. The child has to figure out where he wants to learn. And he has to find the yeshiva where he's going to learn best. And the parent says, you know what? I don't think DRS is for you. But the kid says, I'm telling you, I learned best there. It's amazing. We have father-son Yomi Yuns on January 1st. We have like an in Shabbos. Come on, what other yeshiva high school has that? I'm never going to be able to learn as well as I can at DRS. And the parent says, no, I think you're going to learn better at a different high school. And, I think you should go somewhere else. So the child has the right to say that, as much as I value your opinion, if this is where I feel like I'm going to grow the most in learning, this is where I feel like I'm going to thrive spiritually, religiously, so then this is where I belong. There's only one little point that has to be added, and that is that the tuition bill eventually is going to come, and the parent is under no obligation to pay that tuition bill because the child decided that he wants to learn in that yeshiva. The child, if he could figure it out, how to get himself a scholarship or how to pay for it, so then maybe that's fine, but it wouldn't obligate the parent to necessarily be maskim to whatever the child says. Another example that relates to religious life, and this is unfortunately something that does come up pretty frequently. Sometimes parents have disputes with other people. They don't get along with other people. They have arguments a lot of times with family members. There's politics within a family. And the parent tells the child, I don't want you to talk to your aunt and uncle anymore. I don't want you to talk to your cousin anymore. They're not nice. We got into a fight. So does a child have an obligation to listen to his parent to stay away from or be nasty to other people? So there is a mitzvah in the Torah, the Ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, that a person has to be nice to other people. And that's the equivalent of a parent telling a child not to do a mitzvah. I did see one of the Achronim suggest that that is true, that you're not allowed to be mean to other people and violate after the Reach Kamocha, but it's probably not a great idea to go out of your way to be especially nice to those people when your parents are around. Because that's just trying to, to twist the knife a little bit in your parents. That maybe you shouldn't do. But to always be nice to people, that's something that a person has an obligation to do, regardless of what the parents say. Another example Pesachei Tshuva discusses about a child thinks he could daven really well at a certain shul. And the parent says, no, I want you to daven with me. So if the child is motivated by the idea that he can daven better at a certain minyan, not because his friends daven there and he can get the score to last night's Knicks game at a certain minyan and he's not going to get at another minyan, that would not fit this category, but someone who he really feels he's going to daven better, it's going to be a more spiritually fulfilling experience for him to daven there, so then the child has the right to choose which shul he's going to daven at, even against the parents' objections. This is all when it comes to kibbutz. If it's bizayon, then it's not so pashut that the child can make that decision. I mean, both shuls are having a minyan, they're both davening, and let's say it's a bizayon that the father's going to be davening Rosh Hashanah, and the child's not going to be the Rosh Hashanah. Maybe the father's davening for the Yom. The child's not going to be there to hear the father daven for the yamin, and that the father takes very personally. Not just that I would like you to daven with me, but it's something that would hurt the parents. So then it's not so pashut that this would be an exception. That's all in terms of religious practice. In terms of social, how it's going to affect the child socially. So there are two major exceptions. Number one is who to marry. The Rama writes, the Shulchan Aruch, a parent cannot decide who a child should or should not marry. The Bir Agra explains, and this may relate to our Shaila that we began with. Bir Agra explains, because that's not Kibud Av Aim. That affects your life, it doesn't affect the parent. Meaning, if a parent, let's say, says to a child, listen, purple is my favorite color, and therefore I need you to wear purple shirts every single day. And the child doesn't want to wear purple shirts every single day, so there's no mitzvah of Kibud Av Aim to wear purple shirts every single day, just because that's what the parent asked for. When the Gemara says, how do you do Kibud Av Aim? It says, you give the parent to eat, you give the parent to drink, you take care of the parent, you take care of their physical needs, you speak to them respectfully. These are all things that relate to the parent. But something that doesn't relate at all to the parent is not included in the mitzvah of Kibud Av Aim. The Chaznish writes a little different. The Chaznish says it is included in Kibud Av Aim. It's not technically in any of the categories that the Gemara has, but it's Ratzon HaTorah. And it's clearly the Ratzon of the Torah that you should do what your parents want. So this is a very tricky category. If you go back to our original question, the mother says to the kid, I want you to wear a black hat after I die when you say Kaddish for me. Well, does that affect the parent in any way if the child's wearing a black hat, not wearing a black hat? Even if you hold that there's some religious kiyum that you get by wearing a hat, does it affect the parent? That affects the child's own, it's his own observance, his own business. So someone said to me, well, maybe it does affect the parent because it's a better Kaddish. I don't know, is it a better Kaddish? What's the great sechus of Kaddish? Let's say it's a kiyum for Davar Shabbat Kedusha to have an Atifa Sarosh. Let's, for argument's sake, let's assume there's some kiyum in that. But what's the zechus of Kaddish? The zechus of Kaddish is that you get a tzibur to say Yehi Shmei Rabba. The Gemara Bracha says Yehi Shmei Rabba is the most unbelievable tefillah. It makes HaKadosh Baruch Hu regret the Korban HaBayis. It's such an important thing. The whole zechus of Kaddish is not the words that the Avel is saying. It's the fact that in the zechus of that parent, everyone else is saying Yehi Shmei Rabba. Do I have to make sure everyone else is wearing a hat also? So what difference does it make if the child's wearing a hat or not wearing a hat? It would seem that this is something that doesn't really relate to the parent, and according to the Bir Agra, would not be included in Kibud Av Aim anyway. There's another reason why this may not be included in Kibud Av Aim. The Gemara very clearly defines Kibud Av Aim during the parent's lifetime, Kibud Av Aim after a parent dies. So the Gemara says, how do you do Kibud Av Aim during their lifetime? You give them to eat, you give them to drink, you do nice things for them. How do you do it after they die? You say, Hareini Kaparas Mishkava. It sounds like there's a major shift in how to do Kibud Av Aim, that the entire kiyum of Kibud Av Aim is very limited after a parent dies. Doing what a parent wants may no longer be part of the mitzvah of Kibud Av Aim after a parent passes away. So I thought in that case that the child is not technically obligated. I told him he should get over it and put on a hat because it'll make your mother happy, but that I didn't think he was technically obligated from a Kibud Av Aim perspective to put on the hat. Now, in terms of lying, it's an interesting sugya of lying also, midvar sheker tirchak. There are very few situations where a person is allowed to lie. There are some, the Gemara points out, mipnei shalom, you're allowed to be mishana, you're allowed to lie about puria, a few things that the Gemara highlights that a person is allowed to lie about. But, on the one hand, one could argue, well, this is mipnei shalom, so let him lie. But I think this goes back to the common sense, being a good person kind of thing, where a person has to take a step back and say, how much am I observing the technical halacha and the exact strictures over here, and how much am I just being a bad person? Meaning, one could make a halachic argument that it's permissible to lie in that situation. But if you lie to your mother on your deathbed, I think that qualifies you as a bad person. So it may be some sort of violation of Bein Adam La'atzmo, even if you can't really put your finger on exactly how it's a technical halachic violation. Anyway, parents can not tell a child who to marry and who not to marry, possibly because of that, possibly because it has nothing to do with the parent. It also may be because who to marry relates to another mitzvah in the Torah. When the Gemara quotes the pasuk v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, it's in the context of loving your wife, that you need to meet your wife before you marry her so that you can know that you love her. And if you don't love your wife, then it's a problem. So if a parent's telling you to marry someone you don't want to marry, it may be a violation of v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. So it may just relate to mitzvahs. let's quickly do the last two categories. You have the category of something that's harmful to a parent. I had a Talmud call me up from the airport once saying, I don't know what to do. My father just called me and asked me to pick up a carton of cigarettes at the duty-free shop. Should I aid my father in his suicide? That was the way the kid asked the question. Should I pick up the carton of cigarettes? So I actually saw in the Sefer, Rabbi Tzion Abba Shaul was asked this shayla, and he said, you should say no, that this is harmful to the parent, and therefore you shouldn't do it. He's going to smoke anyway. It'll just cost him a lot more, because he's going to have to pay X amount a pack. I don't know what cigarettes go for, but a lot more than it costs in the duty-free shop. So Rabbi Tzion Abba Shaul says, yeah, but you have to voice an objection. That if parents do something harmful to themselves, an objection needs to be voiced. He said if they keep on asking and pushing, then you could buy it for them. I'm not sure why he doesn't explain that second half, that you could, if they keep on asking, but he says that an objection must be made. And the final category is the miscellaneous categories, miscellaneous examples. If a woman is married, then her obligations to her husband have to come before her obligations to her parents, unless her husband is wise enough to be mochel. If he's wise enough to be mochel, to set an example for the children, look what you do for parents. You have to think about how it's going to be paid forward in the next generation. Look what you do for parents. This is how we go out of our way to help our parents. So then, of course, her chiyuv comes back. And the other important exception is the Gemara discusses that kibud av is mishel av. Parent says, I want you to do grocery shopping for me. No problem. Give me the credit card and I'll go grocery shopping for you. Assuming the parent can afford it, the parent has to pay for it. If the parent cannot afford it, well then it's a mitzvah of tzedakah on the child, and we know in the mitzvah of tzedakah that family comes first. If you have someone who needs tzedakah from within your family, that has to come before you send checks to a kollel in Eretz Yisrael or whatever it is that you like to support that are wonderful causes, but family has to come first. But if the parent can afford it, then the parent should be the one paying for the kibra ve'ein. So we should all be zocha to do this mitzvah properly. It's not a simple mitzvah, and it's always important to remind ourselves that as much as we went through the exceptions, the rule far outweighs and outnumbers the exception to the rule. Okay, thank you very much.